Mini episode 1943 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You'll want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge mini episode 1943. Have with you here today, FDH Lounge, the original dignitary Rick Morris, of course, the managing partner of FDH, and one of our favorite FDH Lounge dignitaries. He is, of course, the great sports writer from our Sports Central, Franz Stuckberry. Great to have him on, as always, whenever he's on. Primarily, we're usually talking football, and usually out of that, college football, and that would be the case today. It is the 2026 college football preview on the FDH Lounge. It has become a tradition to have Fran in for it, as well as checking in with him at other points during the season. So, Fran, great to have you back in, my friend. Great to have the tradition keep going here as we look forward to what should be a very, very wild season.
Thanks, Rick. It's going to be a fun college football season, and the preseason polls came out, and Rick, there's a problem. Whoever's number one usually doesn't win the national championship. And who could be number one in the rankings?
Well, of course, that would be Ohio State, and I actually see them coming close this year. I don't pick them to win the national championship. I will say I pick them to make it to the national championship game. But I think that curse is going to continue for another year. And again, as is generally the case, there's a top tier with a couple of teams on it where there's a lot of parity between the teams. I'm a little bit puzzled at the way that the standings went, especially at the top, but I'm sure we'll get into that subsequently.
Well, Rick, no first place votes for an SEC team. That's shocking.
It is shocking. And to see Indiana number six, not to get too far ahead of myself, is pretty shocking in its own right. I understand they've had a lot of turnover. I understand that Fernando Mendoza is going to be very, very tough to replace a quarterback. But the whole thing here, and I know that, again, this whole thing with, you know, the COVID-era players having an extra year of eligibility, that is now finally behind us. But Indiana's had a formula here with primarily the older players and being able to take a lot of the three-star players and players in that vicinity ratings-wise and really kind of coach them up. To me, with Indiana, it's a thing where to be the man, you got to beat the man. And I don't understand why they're not getting that level of respect from the pollsters there. Number six, I'm not going to give an exact spoiler on where I got them at, but six to me is wildly low for a team that, again, the only 16-0 team in college football history. And until somebody beats this version of the Indiana team, and they haven't lost since the 2025 season, only two losses in the whole Cignetti era, to me, there's a burden of proof that anybody can beat these guys, and the pollsters don't see it that way.
Well, probably because of the quarterback, Hoover, the guy from TCU, and the thing is, he had so many turnovers that might be scaring the pollsters.
It might be, but you know, Indiana's coached up guys subsequently. I guarantee you a year ago, nobody was sitting here saying, pounding their fists, saying Fernando Mendoza will win the Heisman, will be the number one pick in the draft. I mean, there were some hopes for him, perhaps even expectations to some degree, but he certainly outkicked his coverage on everything that everybody was saying about him last August. And I think there's a chance that Hoover may do the same. So seeing all of this, the biggest story heading into this season in terms of the off season and the way that everything went, I think clearly is this whole, it's been for many years now the Wild West in terms of both NIL and then also player eligibility, what constitutes athleticism. We've thrown amateurism completely out the window with NIL, but this whole notion now that you can come back from even having taken money at the pro level or having been drafted or anything like that and come back to college. Like, we are getting to areas that are completely, completely ridiculous. You saw it a little bit last year at the end of the college basketball season. Nate Oakes was trying to pull a fast one with Alabama. He was bringing in guys, I think, that had, or trying to play with guys that had been over in Europe. And I think they had taken that one to court. And subsequently, LSU, Will Wade is doing much the same thing right now. Will Wade is just outright trying, like, oh, I don't care if a guy's played at the pro level. Let's get him in here. Yeah, like, Will.
Come on, he coached at NC State and he left there after a year. I'm happy he's gone.
Yeah. I knew that you would have some particular feelings about him from your perch out there on the triangle. But, yeah, this guy, I think, universally is being seen as pulling some shady kind of crap. And you're seeing it at a lesser level on the college football level right now. But the question is, how much longer will it be on a lesser level? How much longer till there's a bunch of college football coaches saying, I'm going to imitate the kind of crap Will Wade is trying to pull down in Baton Rouge?
It's crazy what's going on, Rick. I mean, with the NIL and the transfers, it's just, I will say one thing. Some teams have transfers. It works, but you can't microwave a football team.
Right. And that's the thing, too. And that, again, it's the kind of thing where it really can sort of eat away at your locker room. It's the kind of thing that's going to undermine team cohesiveness when you're bringing in these hired guns. And I think it's understood by the players that are there differently than the transfer portal. You bring in hired guns from the transfer portal, that's one thing. You're just theoretically upgrading your skill level and just trying to do what's right by the program. When you've got guys that are there that have earned their way up on the depth chart and they are competing against guys who have been in a pro mini camp already, that's where I think dissension could really set into a program. And it's a thing where, again, football, of course, as we know, the rosters, the number of players, you know, out there on the field, significantly more so than in college basketball. In college basketball, you can tilt an outcome with very few players. And to a certain extent, chemistry there may not come into play quite as much. Because if the hired guns that you bring in end up doing good, nobody's going to care. But in football, it's a little harder to make a difference. If you've got a hired gun at right tackle, is he going to play well enough to where it's worth everything else that comes with it and any kind of negative perceptions that may come from within the clubhouse or elsewhere? Football, I think it's a lot harder to do this than it is in basketball, because at least in basketball, if you get it right, I mean, if Will Wade's team goes to the Final Four this year, he's just going to flip everybody off and say, I was right. I think it's a lot harder to do that in college with 22 players that are starting at a time.
Well, I will say one thing. If it's the kids come back to school they played at, it's a little bit easier. But if they go to another college, you basically plug and play in, and it's just ruins your depth chart, your morale. Imagine being in training with players, and all of a sudden some guy comes, you know, out of nowhere to take your job. Lots of animosity.
Yes. That is definitely something that could happen. And so as we look at this coming college football season, one of the biggest differences, perhaps the biggest difference, would be the return of the Pac-12 as something more than a conference in name only. The last 2 years, of course, Washington State and Oregon State. And my joke was that when those two teams played, that the Pac-12 game of the year is the Pac-12 game of the year. But this year you have by dint of the raid that they did of the Mountain West, which had worked into a cooperative relationship with them over a period of time. The Mountain West must feel like they had taken in a tapeworm, quite frankly, for the way that they came out of the deal, the way that the Pac-12 raided them. And subsequently, there was a court settlement, yada, yada, yada. But you've got the Pac-12 back, but as essentially a mid-major conference. Because of the schools that have come in, they've got the mid-major pedigree in there. And, of course, Boise State being one of those teams. You asked me off air who's my pick from the group of five to make the group of six now, I guess it would be, whatever, a group of whatever number to make the college football playoff. It would be Boise State. That's who I have in the 12th spot right now. Some other pretty good contenders as well. And again, if you want to check out any of the FDH college football coverage, go find it at Fantasy Football Draftology 2026, available on the main page at fantasydrafthelp.com. Other picks that we have in there: AAC champion Navy, Conference USA champion Western Kentucky, MAC champion Western Michigan, Mountain West champion UNLV, Sun Belt champion James Madison, as they try to do it with their third coach in recent years, with the last two having gotten plucked away to great acclaim. So thoughts on the mid-major conferences this year, Fran, and what should be a very competitive field to get that number 12 spot, certainly in the college football playoff.
Well, as far as with the Pac-12, now Pac-12 After Dark returns, so now they'll have those late 10:30 Eastern time games for us to watch.
Yep.
I think Boise State will win the Pac-12. The Mountain West is such going to be such a fun conference. You have Air Force runs the triple option. You have Hawaii who runs that run and shoot with Timmy Chang coaching. You have North Dakota State, you know, from finally out of FCS to FBS. And I think I have my pick UNLV to win the Mountain West, and they might be the group of 16. But I mean, Navy has a great chance to win the AAC. Sun Belt, I mean, they lost to Louisiana Tech, so I mean, Conference USA lost to Louisiana Tech to the Sun Belt. It's kind of wide open. I mean, anything can happen as far as the group of six is concerned. But it's gonna be fun having those games to watch. I'll be cheering for North Dakota State to play well and to do well. It'd be great if they got that bid.
Yeah, I think there's a very good chance that they might. That would be a heck of a story if they did. And subsequently, we wait to see, as was the case during the off season here, the whole machination between will it be 16 teams subsequently in the next form of the playoff, 24 teams in the aforementioned Fantasy Football Draftology 2026. I made the prediction that I've seen in recent days could be the case here, that it could be a 20-team field subsequently here, which would open it up for a second mid-major team to make it subsequently. My guess is that would probably get worked into it there. The two teams would make a 20 or 24 team field. Because right now, the Big Ten wants 24 teams. The SEC wants 16. I wasn't in favor of expanding it, frankly, above four. So obviously I prefer 12 to even 16. I'm not used to seeing the SEC as the voice of reason in any room, but here they are saying 16 and no further. But my guess is in the end, it could be 20, and that would open it up, not this year, but in a subsequent year, for two of the teams that we were just talking about, Fran, to make the playoffs.
Well, it's going to be the TV money. The only thing is if they expand to 24, that's going to kill the conference championship games. It's going to mean absolutely nothing. And the thing is, some of these coaches, if they do expand the playoffs, they're going to want to move the season up and try to end around January. And the other problem is with these extra games, you're dealing with the NFL stealing all the time windows on the weekends. I mean, that's a factor, too. The NFL is just cash cow and everything. And it's unfortunate that some of these opening round games are up against NFL games on TV.
You're going to be right now, the opening round, you've got the token Friday night game. You're going to be looking at, I'm sorry, but like probably Thursday and Friday doubleheaders, maybe like 6 and 9:15 both nights, maybe even start the thing on a Wednesday. Maybe it's a Wednesday doubleheader in the first round. If you're looking at 24 teams, then you're going to have to play on enough weeknights here that it's going to resemble Maction, basically. And I don't think really that's the kind of thing that people are necessarily clamoring for. The way that the ratings have gone the last couple of years for this level of the playoffs, I mean, aside from the games that are outright foregone conclusions, I think the ratings weren't great for the James Madison game last year, and I can kind of understand that. But for most of the games, I think they've done generally fairly well. Up from the mid-majors here, the next two conferences, which quite frankly have been lucky to get consideration for more than one team, and I think that will continue to be the case this year, of where that automatic bid is going to be of such great importance. We'll start with the Big 12. It's the Big 12 and the ACC, of course. You've got Texas Tech, which came out of the Big 12 a year ago, the favorite in many people's books, myself included. I've got BYU right on their tail, as well as Utah making the post-Whittingham transition there. A Houston program that appears to be ascendant once again. An Arizona program that has been pointing to, I think, this season for the last couple of seasons to when they might start to make a move. Oklahoma State trying to turn it around pretty quickly post Gundy with the thought by many people that they might be able to do so. Kansas State, Arizona State a year ago, which was riding high. A lot of folks like myself have them picked for the middle of the pack in the conference. We'll see if Kenny Dillingham can prove us wrong. And then from there, in my estimation, TCU, Baylor, Cincinnati, the next couple of teams in line. So the Big 12, and I think I've been saying this the last couple of years, it's a conference with a good amount of depth as far as when you're looking at finding, you know, the teams that could make the Big 12 championship game here. I mean, to me, again, Texas Tech and BYU are somewhat solid favorites to be in that spot, but you could go down to probably, I've got Arizona State eighth on my list. You could probably go as far down as that. And, you know, I wouldn't be, you know, dying of shock if they ended up making it here. So there's a lot of depth, not in terms of national championship contenders, but in terms of contenders to make the conference championship game. And that's what leads to so many meaningful games in conference during the season here. It's not going to have a bearing on who's playing at the end of January, but it's going to have a bearing on who's playing in the first round of the playoffs.
Yeah, and with the Big 12, Texas Tech and the oil money, they gambled a little bit on Brendan Storrs, but that didn't work out. But,
right.
But BYU, I'm so happy BYU and Utah are back together in the same conference. I love that holy war rivalry.
Yes.
And that's a fun rivalry. Utah's a team that can come out of nowhere and cause some problems. I mean, Arizona State, they were picked. They stopped doing preseason polls because they were picked to finish last, and they ended up winning the conference.
Yeah.
The thing is, it's a lot of fun. Kansas, I mean, all these teams are just, you know, playing well. Arizona, I mean, all these different schools have a chance to at least have good seasons, be competitive, pull off upsets. But I think it's going to be Texas Tech and BYU going to the championship. And also, BYU has Notre Dame on the schedule. That might be one of the few stumbling blocks in Notre Dame's way of going undefeated.
Yep. That might be. I've seen those two teams playing in South Bend a long time ago. And, another Holy War battle there between those teams. That will be a significant game this season. Let's talk about Notre Dame for a second before we get into the ACC, which is their sort of quasi-conference. They're not, of course, a member, but they have this deal where they play all the other sports in the ACC, and they have agreed to play, I think, 5 ACC games a year. This is a year where a lot of people are picking Notre Dame to make it as far potentially as they did 2 years ago, which was the national semifinals, at least that far, in large part because of their schedule. Their schedule shapes up very nicely for them this year, Fran.
Yeah, besides Miami at home, which is a home game for them, and at BYU, it's a very easy schedule. It's definitely easy. Basically Notre Dame gets to cherry pick their teams. And also this year, if they're ranked in the top 12, they make the playoffs.
Well, and there's a lot of people that are whining about that. But again, that just shows that they're good negotiators. And that's the thing where I think when you look at it a year ago, you have a case for bitching about it if you're in the top 12 and you don't make the playoffs. Now, I will say this. Now, maybe Miami proved me wrong retroactively, but I thought Notre Dame belonged in the playoffs over Miami. The committee ended up defaulting to head-to-head. But, I mean, if that was the case, if head-to-head was going to matter, they should have been ahead of Notre Dame the whole way here. This whole thing of, like, switching them at the last minute didn't sit right with me and with a lot of other neutral observers, which I consider myself, even though my brother's a Notre Dame alum. I'm not particularly a fan of the program, but I like to be fair. And I think that, again, they deserve that kind of level of respect that if they're in the top 12, they should make it. I think most people think that they will be this year. And again, yeah, the rematch with Miami, it's one of those things where, again, it's not because of the way that the Miami program is these days, of where they're a top flight program in terms of talent. They actually have been for the entire 21st century. They've just never really lived up to it. They've underachieved a bunch of times. But what they are now is they are a top flight, very talented program that doesn't underachieve. Well, let's face it, Fran, they're not colorful like they were in the 80s when we were kids. So it's not the Catholics versus convicts anymore like it was. It'll never be those days ever again because nobody can play as fast and as loose as Miami and another one of their conference foes at this point, SMU, used to be back in the 80s. But Miami and Notre Dame, as a rivalry that is kind of coming back is really
convicts.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, it'll never be Catholics versus convicts. It'll never have that feel again because Miami's not an outlaw program anymore. But it's still, it means something, and it's one of those things where it's always great to see a rivalry get stirred up again, even if it's only short term, because again, they're playing each other these 2 years. Who knows when the next games between them will be as far as the Notre Dame and ACC rotation. But it's great to see because, again, this is one of the things that college football does that a lot of other sports struggle to do, which is to give you the warm and fuzzies in terms of nostalgia when you see that. And when you see two teams that used to really hate each other and have a meaningful rivalry, when they stir it up again with real stakes in place, which I don't even know last year, Labor Day weekend, if we knew what the stakes were going to be. Notre Dame was favored to go pretty far. I don't know that Miami was quite as much, but this year there's no doubt about it. Miami went to the national championship game. Notre Dame is slated to be towards the top. The stakes are as high as they were back in the 80s, even if the whole atmosphere around it doesn't have as much drama as far as the Catholics and convicts.
Well, it'd be nice to see Miami actually develop a quarterback instead of playing the rent the quarterback.
Yes.
Carson Beck last year, Mensa this year. Spend the money, get that quarterback. That's how Miami goes. Let's go into the ACC now. Let's talk about. Yeah. You know, let's break that down.
Yeah, let's do that. My pick for what's going to be in the ACC championship game, I would say Miami and Louisville. I give the edge to Miami there. But when you talk about this, I mentioned a second ago here, SMU, some of the other teams. This is a thing where, again, I think the Big 12 has been more so along the lines of what I talked about just a few minutes ago here. I think the ACC is getting to that point as far as you get past Miami, which appears to be the cream of the crop right now. And there's an awful lot of parity among the next several teams here. So the next several teams, again, none of them look to be threats to be playing at the end of the college football playoff, but to make it into the first weekend here, a distinct possibility for, in this order in my rankings, Louisville, SMU, Virginia, the forgotten Clemson team outside the top 25 this year, Georgia Tech, Virginia Tech, Pittsburgh. I think you get down to Pittsburgh at 8 and maybe even California at 9. I always love to say the whole thing as one sentence because it makes me giggle, California in the Atlantic Coast Conference. But again, with the trajectory of the Cal program the last couple of years, who knows? They got off the, what was it, I think like a 4-0 start last year and they had game day out by the bay. So again, the ACC is a very interesting conference once you get past Miami. You've got some teams at the bottom that are not in good shape, to be honest with you. You know, Boston College, Stanford, Syracuse, North Carolina, which has just been a flaming wreck since Belichick got there. And now Mike Lombardi, like, oh, gee, who would have ever thought that a guy with Mike Lombardi's famous sense of, scruples would end up being in any kind of a trouble, huh? So, so the ACC's got its share of colorful figures at the dregs of the conference as well.
Well, you're talking about Miami, their team to beat in the ACC. I think the second best team might be SMU. And the funny thing is, this year, Rick, an ACC championship game, whoever wins that game gets there. So the number two team could possibly be stealing a bid. But ACC is kind of a fun conference to watch. Louisville will be good with their offense and Jeff Fromm, who I interviewed when he played for Atlanta Rage in the 2001 XFL. So that was kind of fun to deal with that. North Carolina, Chapel Bill, if they show some improvement, they'll keep him. Otherwise, he's gone after this year. The game against TCU in Ireland will be a big see how that plays out. There's lots of parity. There's lots of things open. NC State is a team that they might win 8-9 games. The thing is, the A-Dorn always does enough to win games to keep them happy, but I want to see a 10-win season at NC State eventually. This 8-9 wins every year is getting old.
I can understand that. I've got Florida State picked for 11th in the conference, which would mean that at the end of this season, one of the historically plum jobs in college football would be coming open if that's the case. So potentially looking down the road, we may be looking at the restoration of the Florida State program, because it's only going to take one more year, like the kind of years they've been having recently, for changes to be made. But, yeah, I agree with you on Miami being the cream of the crop in the ACC.
I mean, so. Mike Norvell might be fired if they don't show improvement this year, the Florida State coach.
Well, he may not make it to the end.
Labor Day against SMU, that's going to be fun. That's going to be a fun game to watch. You know, that's going to be an important game for them. And non-top 25 for the first time since 2011? What's going on here? Even with the transfer portal, they're not in top 25.
Yeah, again, Dabo Swinney, certainly more than a little bit stubborn as far as utilizing the transfer portal to its full extent. So that's where, again, he's going to have to make adjustments to be able to stay at the level that he's been at. Hey, maybe he throws his name in the hat for the Florida State job if it comes open after this year. Who knows? But again, Miami and Texas Tech, the defending champions of sort of the next two conferences, if you will, in college football, the Big 12 and the ACC. So you and I see them repeating this year. And we'll see if we have a consensus on the big two conferences in college football. Let's start with the SEC, which, as you said, was locked out of any first place votes in the AP poll. As far as how this season goes, and this is where, again, you're looking at what differentiates this conference from the last two we talked about, is that when I was talking about like the 2 through 8 teams in both conferences roughly, and the ACC and the Big 12, that like they're going to play a lot of games that could be instrumental for who ends up just making it to the first weekend of the playoffs and probably no further, and likely no further, frankly, than the Big 12 championship game, because I'm not sure any of them are going to get past Texas Tech and Miami and the ACC. Here, it's a legit matter of a team that can make a run to potentially the national championship, even when you get past the first couple of teams in the conference. In the SEC, a lot of people would say that the top tier is comprised of these teams in whatever order. The order that I have them in is at the top, Texas, followed by Georgia, followed by LSU, and Texas A&M. I think arguably that tier extends down to Oklahoma, potentially Mississippi. Most people would probably cut it off there. But even beyond that, you've got, in my book, number 7, Alabama, number 8, Missouri, number 9, Tennessee. I wish I had him higher as a Vols fan. With Jim Knowles being there to work with the defense, hopefully he can work some miracles. Down to South Carolina at number 10. We'll see if Norris can have a comeback season, a quarterback like they're counting on. Florida at 11. They have a chance to make a quicker turnaround than that, though. Clark Lee is going to want to prove me wrong for saying Vanderbilt at 12. And Auburn at 13. They've been getting off to a nice start with their new program this year as well. So just the depth in the SEC, that's one of the areas where they really have it over the Big Ten, is that the Big Ten may have more teams at the top, although I would call it probably an even number of teams that are capable of winning the national championship. But gun to my head, I might say at the tippy top, you give the edge to the Big Ten. But in the SEC, when you're looking at the depth, they're still the kings of it this year in my book.
Yeah, as far as all the depth is concerned, but the SEC has two huge games in September. You have Ohio State and Texas, then you have Michigan, Oklahoma. And Oklahoma's coach has got a nice big contract extension. Would you have given it to him?
I don't know if I would have. I mean, it's one of those things where he did what I would call sort of the bare minimum as far as at least finally making the playoffs. But I think with Venables, it's kind of been a thing a little bit of, you know, can he win the big one? Which, that's really sort of been the mark of this program going back to, you know, when we think of Bob Stoops, we kind of tend to think of the front end of his years in Norman. The back end of his years, they weren't really doing quite as much. The Lincoln Riley years, again, they did make the college football playoff, I think once, maybe twice, but at least once. But like Oklahoma, for the bulk of the 21st century, has been, you know, at the periphery of the conversation, the periphery at best. And I think Venables probably should have had to prove it another year. Well, yeah, because like, but here's the thing. And I'm always sensitive to the other side of the coin, because if somebody's saying, well, you got to wrap them up in case somebody steals them away. Okay. But like, who's lining up to throw more money at Brent Venables than what you're already giving him?
Nobody.
I don't think so. I don't think so, because anybody else is going to look at the fact that he hasn't quite proven himself at this level. So it's a thing where, like, he's going to have to do better than getting into the playoffs and then getting housed by Alabama in the first round. That's going to have to be, you know, that's going to have to be the floor of what he does from here on in for that to be the case in my book.
Yeah, definitely. And let's look at Lane Kiffin. 41 transfers, Rick? 41 yeah. transfers? $50 million budget?
Yeah.
That's insane. And then you have the Washington Commanders quarterback whining about this NIL stuff. He's off an injury. His coach might get fired. Give me a break.
Yeah. I mean, I'm young enough to remember on the NIL stuff, or old enough to remember, I guess you would say, when supposedly it was going to be a cap of $20 million per team, and then from there it was going to be only approved NIL deals. They're only going to be real endorsements, not phony endorsements, none of this Fugazi stuff. And somehow LSU is still spending $50 million. So color me shocked on that one. And we're going to see, because in terms of budget and in terms of hype around getting a whole bunch of star recruits, this is probably the most amount of hype we saw since year one of, I'd say, Deion Sanders at Colorado. And when you look at September of that year, it was kind of like, yeah, that's what he was talking about. But ever since September of 2023, it's not quite been the case.
I'm still not convinced that LSU is going to win a national championship with Lane Kiffin. Remember, Brian Kelly had all the hype when he came from Notre Dame in that dumb Southern accent. But I'm not convinced that LSU is going to be able to win a national championship. If they don't, then it's just a waste.
Well, as a Tennessee fan who loathes Lane Kiffin, I am pessimistic enough to think that it may happen at some point in the next couple of years.
Week three, you have to watch LSU and Ole Miss. That's going to be one hell of a revenge hate game.
Yes. And by the way, I'm glad you mentioned that, because in Fantasy Football Draftology 2026, available on the main page at fantasydrafthelp.com, one of the other features we have in there is our top 25 games of the season. What you just mentioned, LSU at Mississippi, September 19th, we have that as the number 5 game of the season. So that's an important one. LSU has a couple of ones on the schedule here, too. Number 8 on our list, Texas at LSU, November 14th. Number 14 is Alabama at LSU, November 7th. So back-to-back monster games, Alabama and Texas. They're going to be lucky to get a split out of that. You go down to number 22. This one's early in the season, Clemson at LSU, September 5th. So that is the biggest impediment to Lane Kiffin year one. So it's a thing where, do I think he's going to make the playoff? I do, because I actually have them ranked 8th in my predicted year-end rankings. So I think they're going to make the playoff, but I think it's going to be with a couple losses under their belt and with the committee giving them the benefit of the doubt on having played a grinder of a schedule there, Fran.
Rick, how is it possible we're in the show 32 minutes long and we haven't mentioned Alabama yet? What is going on here, Rick?
Again, this is sort of the invisible kind of status that they're at right now. And that's where, again, Kalen DeBoer, you know, he's been locked up and taken care of by the Alabama administration here. And, you know, they're placing value on keeping him as the coach there. But it's one of those things where I sort of flash back to the 80s and Earl Bruce coming in after Woody Hayes. And it was, do you remember, Fran, what used to be Earl Bruce's nickname?
What is it?
They used to call him good old 9-3 Earl. Because that was taken as a slam that, like, we have higher standards at Ohio State than your perennial 9-3 records. And Kalen DeBoer is getting much the same level of crap following Nick Saban. You go back to in the 80s, I think was it Bill Curry, I think, that followed Bear Bryant, whoever it was. That was what spawned the saying of, you don't want to be the guy who replaces the guy. You want to be the guy who replaces the guy who replaces the guy. And so that's where, and you'll get what Gene Stallings did at Alabama subsequently. So that's the thing where I think DeBoer is one of the best coaches in the country. We also have in there, I mean, what don't we have, quite frankly, as I keep mentioning these features here, but the top 25 coaches for FDH this season, our rankings, we've still got Kalen DeBoer, you know, in there perched nicely. We got him number 8 overall. To us, he's the 8th best coach in the country at FDH. So he takes a lot of crap, but it's like it's a new era. And I think Nick Saban has been as supportive as he can be of him on TV by saying, look, it's a new era. And it's, you know, again, with the NIL, with the transfer portal being what it is, Nick Saban barely had to deal with this. He got out a couple of years ago, and these were factors in him getting out because he didn't want to have to deal with this. So it's not an apples to apples point of comparison. In the 80s, you could make it an apples to apples point of comparison between whoever was coaching then and Bear Bryant because the circumstances were largely the same. Today, apples and oranges, certainly, no question about it, Fran. It's a lot harder for Kalen DeBoer to basically keep things going there. But, you know, the Alabama program remains what it is in terms of the money, the resources, and perennially the top recruiting, and that will always give them a chance.
Well, I will say one thing, Rick. I know the Big Ten is better, has better football teams, but I enjoy watching the SEC games. I really love the rivalries, the history, all these things. Tennessee, Alabama, they're going to wear their home jerseys in that game. And the red. The SEC is always fun to watch because anything can happen in the SEC. I mean, it's fun to watch. Ole Miss is going to be good this year. They're going to be fun to watch. It's just, I mean, Vanderbilt, I mean, come on. NIL, now they can win games. I mean, Auburn has a huge week one game against Baylor. We'll see how they play against them.
Yeah, and, you know, you go back to, like, way back in the day, like the Saturday night games with Ron Franklin. Like, that was my jam. I used to love that. Like, my Vols used to play in a lot of those games. And, yeah, the SEC has always been a very, very fun conference to watch. Every weekend, it seems like, and particularly with the expansion of recent years, every weekend they're giving you at least a couple of marquee games. And then a lot of times some of the games that aren't the marquee games are a little bit interesting as well.
Is Texas coach Steve Sarkisian on the hot seat if they don't get to the least national championship?
I don't know if it's national championship game or bust, but they got to make a good run. They've got
to be a hot seat.
Coming off of last year, well, I don't know if they have to beat Ohio State, but it's like, you know, if they don't at least make the SEC championship game, then I think the heat really starts to get turned up on him.
And again,
yeah, the expectations are insane, but I think they should be insane. Like, you know, you're Texas, you have all these resources, and you should be in a position to compete a little bit stronger than they have been. So any other thoughts on the SEC, Fran?
It's going to be fun to watch, you know, with the SEC, all the games, especially this, I like watching the Saturday night games, but they'll be fun. And it's going to be lots of parity. It's going to be lots of upsets. And those middle of the pack teams are going to, like a Missouri, they can be anyone any given day. Texas A&M, they're another team that can win games. It's going to be anything goes in the SEC.
Yeah. And again, I've got Arkansas last. But, I mean, they're a team that could make it as far as the middle of the pack this season. Some of the head coaching hires that were made at the end of last year by the SEC teams, it may not take very long for them to start bearing fruit. So we shall see. There's been a lot of good buzz about number 14 in my rankings, Kentucky, and how they may end up doing. So we'll have to see even some of the lower teams in terms of expectations in the SEC, how they may end up making noise at various points along the way. That takes us to the conference that has yielded the last three national champions, the Big Ten. And as I said before, I kind of teased this out before, that I've got Indiana actually as my number one team in the country at this point, because again, I think sort of until proven differently, that's where they're at. Nobody thought they were going to make the run that they were going to make last year. So I think for myself included, I didn't have them in my 12 teams to make the playoffs. So I think everybody should be a little bit more sort of humble as far as just assuming that they know what the depths or what the heights are potentially that Indiana could rise to. I've got Indiana and Oregon as my two teams to make the Big Ten championship game. Ohio State, you talk about a meat grinder of a schedule this year. They will, in my estimation, make the playoff and make the playoff by a comfortable margin. But the games along the way, again, I refer back to the FDH top 25 games of the 2026 season. They're in the top three games on our list. Number one, Ohio State at Indiana, October 17th. Number two, Ohio State at Texas, September 12th. Number three, Oregon at Ohio State, November 7th. So they play three legitimate national championship contenders. You skip down to number six, and what should be the revival of what I would consider to be a very, very, very strong rivalry as far as the teams being evenly matched on the field with Michigan and Ohio State. In recent years, Michigan's beaten Ohio State because Ohio State has underachieved every time they've lost. With Kyle Whittingham being at Michigan, we got that game number six on the list this year, Michigan at Ohio State, November 28th. So that game is going to be really tough, and Ohio State already knows they can never take that game for granted. So you just – It's almost unprecedented to have to go through a season like that. And that's not even mentioning the number 21 game on our list on Halloween, Ohio State at USC. That's going to be a tough game. But I've got Ohio State ranked third in the conference. Here's my rankings going a little bit down the ladder here. Four USC, five Michigan. So in other words, I've got Ohio State playing all four other teams in the top five as I have them ranked here. Number six, Washington. I think this is there's a chance they take another step forward this year and might be a dark horse for the playoffs. Seven, Penn State. Maybe with Matt Campbell, it may not be that long of a turnaround that they go through. Number eight, Iowa. They are always in the mix. Number nine, Illinois. Ditto, at least in terms of the last 2 years or so. And then you get into the teams that are a little bit further back. And I think this is where the SEC separates itself from the Big Ten when you're looking at the caliber of teams from that point on, because the next couple of spots here, 10 Nebraska, 11 Minnesota, 12 Wisconsin, 13 UCLA, which, by the way, UCLA could be on the top half of the conference. If Bob Chesney does what a lot of people think he's going to do at UCLA, they could be potentially in the top half of the Big Ten year one. And potentially a team that may make life very difficult for Lincoln Riley in L.A. That is going to be a very great rivalry in the years to come, I think, is USC-UCLA revived rivalry between them. So the Big Ten is it's interesting, but primarily so with that just absolute cluster at the top of some of the most powerful teams in the country. But as you start getting to the middle of the pack and then the second half of the Big Ten, I think that's where the depth falls apart vis-a-vis the SEC.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that, Rick, but it's top heavy.
Yes.
About six teams, you have six teams that are going to cannibalize each other, and you're going to be glued to watch games every week. I think Penn State's a sleeper team to make the possible college football playoff because it's a weaker schedule. They avoid some of the big heavy hitters in that. And the Rocco Beck, Anthony Beck's son, is a quarterback, is gonna be a quarterback for Penn State this year. They might surprise people. And UCLA, last year they won, I think, like three games. I think they might win at least six and go to a bowl game. That'd be tremendous momentum for UCLA, just if they can double their win total.
It would be. And again, for the Chesney coaching staff that led James Madison to the playoff a year ago, much like what happened when Cignetti brought a bunch of the guys into Indiana year one when they had their quick turnaround. Bob Chesney has done the same thing in L.A. with UCLA, bringing in a lot of those guys. So it could be a relatively quick turnaround there. And, the Big Ten's got a couple of teams that I think even when you look past the playoffs here, I've got Penn State ranked 23rd coming into the year. So I got them a little further back, but as far as the last four teams out in terms of the playoff selection at the beginning of December, I've got those four teams as number 13, USC, number 14, Michigan, 15, Mississippi, and 16, Alabama. I'll give you my 12 playoff teams here. Here's the order that I have them in. And that is one Indiana, two Texas, three Oregon, four Georgia, five Notre Dame, six Miami, seven Ohio State, eight LSU, nine Texas A&M, 10 Oklahoma, 11 BYU, 12 Boise State. So whether it's those teams or if it ends up being a couple of other possibilities mixed in there, it is going to be an incredible playoff again this year. And I think a very, very interesting and compelling season leading up to it, Fran.
Well, definitely. Back on the Big Ten, if Lincoln Riley doesn't win like nine games this year, he might be a coach on the hot seat. Year six, they haven't done anything.
Yeah.
The expectations, I mean, this is supposed to be a good roster, and they have a sleeper defensive coordinator. The guy from TCU is going to be
That's right.
That's going to help a lot.
It is. And, boy, you talk about something that could be a coin flip on that guy getting another year. Because I got him 13. I got him as the first team out of the playoffs. So that's a thing where, I mean, if you're USC at the end of the year, do you fire him because you didn't make it, or do you give him another year because you came that close? I could see that one going either way, Fran.
Well, if they win 9 games, they'll keep him, and that might be enough to get into the playoff with the brutal Big Ten schedule. If they go 8-4 or less, then the boosters may say we'll buy you out and start with someone else.
That may very well be the case. The semifinals that I have, just skipping ahead to that, I've got Indiana over Georgia in the Orange Bowl, and number 7, Ohio State over number 6 in the Sugar Bowl in a rematch. National championship game, I've got number 1 Indiana over number 7 Ohio State. So I said before, I do have Ohio State coming close, but to me, Indiana is the team until proven otherwise. It just, somebody's got to show me that they have a way to be able to stop what Cignetti is doing, because it wasn't even necessarily particularly close in any of the games through the playoffs last year. That Big Ten championship game could have gone either way. It was very close with them and Ohio State. But as you get through, again, it wasn't a blowout of Miami, but it was a solid win over them. And they just absolutely destroyed Alabama and a very good Oregon team en route to making it there. So that's how I have it playing out, Fran. Any thoughts that you have in terms of the championship for this year?
Well, it's kind of hard to read, but I kind of like Oregon. But the problem with picking Oregon is that they haven't won a big game. I like to see teams prove it to be first and win. I mean, no one expected the Indiana came out of nowhere.
Yeah.
The Big Ten's going to cannibalize each other, but they're gonna dominate. And when it comes to the playoffs, those Big Ten teams, if they don't play against each other, they're going to knock teams off.
That's going to be the case, no question about it. And it's going to be fun seeing it play out. And, again, just should be another very, very memorable season, and one that is going to deliver so many twists and turns along the way here. Any additional thoughts on the upcoming college football season, Fran?
Well, Rick, what I tend to do when I'm watching college football games is I flip around, and whatever is the close game, I tend to zero on it. If the games are close, I'll flip around and watch the close endings of the games. And then I watch college football, college game day. That's always fun. Then I watch college football final. It's fun for us at the midpoint to react, see who was overrated, who was underrated. It's been fun being able to break it down, because these preseason polls that mean nothing. It's nice. It's hype. It's hoopla. There's going to be teams that are going to come out of nowhere that they're going to shock us. And there's going to be teams that are high up there that are going to be busts. Anything can happen in college football. Like Vince Mann used to say, anything can happen in the WWE.
Yeah. Well, and I think they stole that from college football many years ago because expect the unexpected has been something that we've been seeing. And a number of points along the way in each of the most recent college football seasons, so too will it be the case again this year. And the only thing that is for sure is that, A, it will be a lot of fun tracking it along the way, and, B, catching up with you along the way. Traditionally, the last couple of years, we've reconvened about mid-season, or maybe just past mid-season. So wherever it makes sense. October is a crowded sports month between the start of the NBA and NHL seasons. You have the World Series in there as well. So we always fit it the week on the schedule that makes the most sense. So it's, I think we always bill it as a stretch run preview. But we'll be catching up with you for that. And certainly the plan is, again, with a college football bowl season / playoff preview in December. But always great to have you on, my man. The great Fran Stuckberry. Don't miss his writing at R Sports Central. Thank you so much for being here for the breakdown, my man.
Thanks, Rick. We'll have to look back and see how many years I've been doing it with you. It keeps getting better and better.
It absolutely does. It does. And this, I believe it goes back to the Sports Talk Network days. And we were there as late as 2011. So you've been with us doing segments for an awful long time. It's always been great to have you in. Always appreciate you being on. And always appreciate all of you checking us out in the audience here. Thank you for checking out FDH Lounge mini episode 1943.